Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. When an adult is having a stroke, the signs and symptoms are often recognizable. Drooping in the face, weakness in the arm, slurred speech. And an adult can usually perceive that something dangerous is occurring. But what happens when the victim is a toddler or an infant, someone who may not be able to sense or communicate that something is amiss? Pediatric stroke is more common than you think. Later in the show, we'll visit a therapy session with a mother and her toddler who suffered a stroke at the age of 1.5.
Yeah.
Can you say help?
Help.
Good job.
Joining us first to talk about the incidence of pediatric stroke and innovative therapy is Dr. Frank Pidcock, Vice President of Rehabilitation at the Kennedy Krieger Institute and Director of the Pediatric Rehabilitation Division at the Johns Hopkins Hospital University School of Medicine. He's also Medical Director of Constraint-Induced Movement Therapy at Kennedy Krieger for children who have had strokes. Welcome, Dr. Pidcock.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So first, tell us what happens in the body when someone has a stroke.
Strokes occur when blood flow to areas of the brain are blocked or interrupted, either by a clot forming or a broken blood vessel. When either of these two things happen, brain cells are deprived of oxygen and they begin to die. And unfortunately, this can occur within minutes.
And that results in what?
I found that it's useful to use the acronym FAST in talking about recognizing stroke symptoms. The F stands for face. If you see any asymmetry in the way the face looks or drooping smile on one side, that's a serious finding and that child should be immediately evaluated. The A in the acronym stands for arms, so the arms can be involved. So if you just notice that when a child raises their arm and one arm doesn't go up as high as the other one or one kind of tends to fall down, that's also a sign that that child needs to be immediately evaluated. And the S stands for speech. So if a child's speech is changed, if it's slurred, and you have no reason for why that should occur, then that child also needs to be evaluated.
And the T?
And the T stands for time. Time is of the essence. The sooner you can get a child to the emergency room or a hospital that's equipped to evaluate the cause of the stroke and initiate early therapy, the better chances are to minimize the subsequent damage from the lack of oxygen. It's very important to act fast if you suspect a child might be having a stroke.
How common is pediatric stroke?
Pediatric strokes affect about 25 in 100,000 newborns in this country every year.
25 in 100,000, that's so it's 1 in 4,000.
That's correct. And now, if you just look at children who are older, it occurs in about 12 per 100,000. The causes of stroke in newborns can be different, and they're related to whether the blood flow to the brain has been interrupted by a disease or whether there was some factor causing the interruption to blood flow before the child was born. These are oftentimes related to abnormalities of how the brain blood vessels formed. And oftentimes we don't recognize these abnormalities until a child starts to develop. And oftentimes families will come to their pediatricians and they'll say, you know, I think there's something different about how my child is moving his arm or his legs.
Different than the way that baby used to, or different from other babies?
Different from other babies, different from the usual developmental sequence. Oftentimes these babies are diagnosed with cerebral palsy, but we're finding out that many of the children with cerebral palsies had a stroke before they were born.
Before they were born, in the womb?
That's correct. We still don't understand many of the factors that lead to an in utero stroke for infants. But we do think they have to do with how the blood vessels are formed in the brain. And they, for reasons that are not at all clear, can interrupt blood flow to the developing brain, causing damage. However, this damage is often silent, and we don't observe it until the child developmentally starts to move arms and legs, between 6 and 12 months of age, typically. That's when strokes are sometimes picked up by the pediatricians. And they come to a place like the Kennedy Krieger Institute for further diagnostic evaluation and also for therapy.
What are the kinds of strokes that occur when after birth, but in a child?
There are two kinds of pediatric stroke. One is related to blockage of blood flow to the brain. That's often caused by abnormalities of the blood vessels in the brain or blockage of those blood vessels. The second kind occurs when you have blood vessels in the brain which are fragile and which can bleed. And so you have bleeding into the brain, which is a second category of stroke that you can see in childhood. One of the causes of hemorrhagic stroke could be something
that's
like...
That's the second category.
The second category would be things such as infections and some metabolic disorders and accidental trauma. There is the situation where a child might be sucking on a popsicle or having an ice cream bar. If they trip and the ice cream bar stick is still in their mouth, there's a possibility that it can get jammed in the back of the throat. That, unfortunately, is where the carotid artery is, and trauma to the artery from the outside can cause a clot that could eventually break off and go to the brain, interrupting blood supply, causing a stroke. All of these are unique. You know, you wouldn't have expected it. You know, kids get themselves in an unusual position. They get kind of stuck between their bunk bed and the wall. I've seen that happen in terms of causing a stroke. I've seen it in the context of a swim meet and hitting your head on the side of the swimming pool in an odd angle. So these accidental causes of stroke, sometimes very hard to predict. So if your child has had an accident, twisted their neck in a funny way, complains of some neck pain, and then you think that their speech is slurred or you think that they're having trouble raising one arm or the other, that would certainly fit into the category about close observation and coming to the emergency room for further checkout. And the one that we're really concerned about in terms of recognition and early intervention would be the kind where it's associated with some medical condition. For example, congenital heart disease, where there are abnormal heart valves, clots can form on those valves. And if those clots break off, they go to the brain and block the blood flow to the brain. Another condition commonly associated with stroke is sickle cell disease. And you can also have that issue where blood vessels block the blood flow to the brain, causing a stroke.
So all of those could be associated with stroke. What I'm trying to develop is some sense of how parents might be alert to right. whether their infant is particularly vulnerable.
There are no warning signs for the kind of stroke that occurs before you're born. However, parents should be vigilant and observing on how their child is developing, especially compared to other children and compared to the normal development of balance, use of the arms, speech development. The type of stroke that occurs when you're older, not related to something that happened before you were born. Oftentimes, those are very sudden in onset.
That's Dr. Frank Pidcock, medical director of the Kennedy Krieger Constraint-Induced Movement Therapy Program for Pediatric Stroke. Here on The Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about strokes in children and infants. If I understand correctly, the onset of symptoms of a stroke is similar for adults and children. Do treatment therapies differ?
Traditional treatments for recovering from a stroke, which is seen in both children and adults, is paralysis of an arm or a leg or both, are basically the same. What is exciting is the possibility that we can take advantage of the brain's innate ability to remodel itself through sensory techniques and therapy techniques early in life, which are more vigorous and more abundant, that capacity to remodel itself in a young child compared to an adult. This is the kind of therapy that where we limit the use of the uninvolved arm and really focus all our attention on the involved arm or the involved leg during intensive therapy programs. This is also known as constraint-induced movement therapy.
Constraint-induced movement therapy. How does it work?
The therapist will place a removable soft cast on their good arm. On their good arm. And the children seem to tolerate this much better than the parents oftentimes. They get used to it right away. Then the two other components of this kind of therapy are shaping, which is a type of exercise where you begin with simple tasks such as stacking blocks, for example. And the therapist works with the child to stack one or two blocks. When they get good at that, and this is with the affected arm.
The arm that's been damaged by the stroke.
The arm that's been damaged. Then they work on three or four blocks. So you build up skills by starting with something simple, but also something that the child or young toddler wants to do, something involved with play usually, and then you build up their skills and build up their strengths. The third component is repetition. And like anything else, the more you practice something, the better you get at it. And we find that most children with an experienced occupational therapist, such as those that we have in our Kennedy Krieger program, get very good results from this kind of intervention.
Why does this work?
The brain has the innate capability to rewire itself. And some of the research that is being done at Kennedy Krieger looks at what are some of the neurologic underpinnings for what exactly happens in the brain when it remolds. There are basically three mechanisms that we like to think about. One is making use of the extra brain cells that we have. Everyone is born with a surplus of brain cells.
You can kind of recruit cells that otherwise wouldn't be used.
That's correct. The second mechanism that we think about when we talk about, well, how does this really work, is all the nerve cells in the brain talk to each other, and they have signals that can be either increased or decreased. So by practicing a certain pattern of movement with this therapy, you can make those signals stronger or weaker. So you try to make the good signals stronger and the bad ones weaker. And then finally, the brain is so amazing. There's just so many interconnections between the axons and the neural network that we're working on. How do you figure out which is the right path for nerve signals to take? And I often compare this to the New York subway system, where there's lots of stops. And to get from place A to place B, there's many ways to get there. With therapy, we are trying to train these developing brains to take the most efficient and shortest route to get from point A to point B. And I think children have a better potential for doing this because their brains have more of these extra cells and they're more adaptable. And that's why I'm excited about this kind of intensive therapy where we're really focusing on trying to remodel the brain using a variety of therapy techniques.
Dr. Pidcock, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Frank Pidcock is medical director of the Kennedy Krieger Constraint-Induced Movement Therapy Program for Pediatric Stroke. After a short break, producer Melissa Geer visits Kennedy Krieger to talk with a mother and her toddler daughter who was just a year and a half when she suffered a stroke. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this morning about the incidence of stroke in youngsters, in children, even in the womb. Dr. Frank Pidcock from Kennedy Krieger Institute told us about constraint-induced movement therapy for pediatric stroke patients. Producer Melissa Geer visited Kennedy Krieger to meet Nikki Walcott and her daughter, Brooklyn, during a therapy session. Brooklyn had a stroke when she was just 1.5.
Yeah? Were they good?
My name is Nikki Walcott. We live in Harford County, Maryland. Married to my husband, Bill, for 15 years. And we have four beautiful children. Will, who is 11, his Abby, who is 8, and then Brooklyn and Shelby, who are identical twins, are 2.5.
When did this happen with Brooklyn? And just kind of paint me the whole picture of where you were and what happened.
Okay. We went on a family vacation last July 30th. We left. We drove to Disney with us and my parents and my brother. July 31st, we had been in the park all day. We were in the Magic Kingdom. She was a little bit fussier that morning than normal, but we just assumed it was the changes. You know, she hadn't slept well the night before. We had a long drive the day before, and she finally fell asleep. She woke up from a nap. We went to go to dinner about 4 o'clock, and my husband took her out of her stroller, and she wouldn't stand up. And we didn't think it was ironic just because she was so tired and it was so hot. But as she sat and she ate that day at dinner, the food kind of ran out the left side of her mouth. And my husband kept saying, oh, it's the heat, it's the heat. And I said, well, you know, there's something not right. And we let it go and we went back to the hotel. And by the time we got back to the hotel that night, it was about 7 o'clock. She could no longer self-support herself. She couldn't sit up. She couldn't weight bear on her left side at all. When she would take a couple of steps, she would fall over. She'd take about 3 steps and she'd fall to that side. I worked in veterinary medicine for 15 years. So I kind of self-evaluated her and I was like, you know, something's just not right here. So we called the paramedics and they came and they got her. And by the time they reached her and stuck her in her foot for a glucose, a blood sugar, she didn't even cry. She had no sensation in her left side at all at that point. So we were transferred to Arnold Palmer's Children's Hospital down in Orlando, and they were fabulous. And within about a half an hour, they diagnosed her that she had had a stroke. We were in the hospital for 3 days, and then we were finally released and drove back home. Came home and then within a matter of a month started with the doctors here at Kennedy Krieger, the therapist here at Kennedy Krieger.
Ready?
Yay!
Oh, is it that one?
Yeah.
Yeah? Do you need help?
Yeah.
Can you say help?
Help.
Oh, Brooklyn, can you say help?
Help. Help.
Good job.
You said that you kind of self-evaluated. Was it even going through your mind that it could possibly be a stroke?
Not really, because it's not one of those things in a 16-month-old that you think can happen. But, you know, I've seen enough to know that it wasn't right. And it was one of the things that was in the back of my mind, because I said to my husband, I said, she looks like she's had a stroke. She had the facial drooping. She had no control of that left side. You know, so it was one of those things, but we didn't even know this was something that could happen in children.
Can you describe what the past, I guess, just about a year and a half has been like, what it's been like for you and for your family?
It's been hard. It's been real hard.
Sorry.
No, don't worry.
You don't ever want to see your children have to suffer anything. And it's hard to watch her struggle every day to do simple tasks that she could do a year ago. My kids are amazing. They're absolutely amazing. And my son and my daughter are so helpful. And they strive to, you know, help her as much as possible as they can. But yeah, it's been a journey. I never knew how strong I was until I had her. And she shows me every day that it's possible, because every day she's making improvements and she's getting stronger and she's fighting this battle. And it's not an easy battle for her, but I watch her in her therapies and I watch her do these things, and she amazes me what she's capable of every day. But yeah, it's been hard. It's been hard on everybody.
Has the relationship or the dynamic with her twin changed at all, or what has been affected, I should say?
You know, twins are funny in the aspect that they're able to read each other really, really well. And Shelby can be that voice for Brooke when she can't. And she just kind of knows what she needs and what she wants. And that is an amazing bond. It's an amazing bond with them. But, you know, I don't think it's affected them in any way. If anything, I think it's made them stronger. And I think it's made them closer.
Does Brooklyn have the awareness that something has changed?
I don't think so. She wants to do everything to keep up with her brothers and sisters the way that she normally would, and she will stop at nothing to do that. So no, I don't think it's affected her in any way. I think in a way it's made her, it defines her a little bit more, and it her willpower and what she's able to accomplish. But no, I don't think she's aware that she's any different than anybody else.
Physically, how has Brooklyn been affected?
So physically, she has a weakness on her left side. So her left arm and her left leg are weaker than her right side. They'll never be her dominant side. She'll always be right side dominant. But the hope is with the therapies that she's going through here at Kennedy Krieger and the constraint therapy that she is in now that is restricting her right side and helping her left arm grow stronger is going to help to improve the use of both hands and her regain use of opening and closing her hands as she progresses.
And so constraint therapy, can you describe what they do, how they work with Brooklyn for that?
So she is casted right now. She has a full cast on her arm, her right arm, which is her strong arm. And every day she comes and does occupational therapy and physical therapy, as well as speech therapy, to help her improve the strength in the left arm, which is her weaker arm. And we're working for her to open and close her left hand.
Good holding. Okay. Dip, dip, dip.
Which is one of the things that she struggles with the most. We're also working on building up muscles in her left leg, which is her weaker leg. So those are what this therapy is helping her do.
Oh my goodness, you're so strong.
So does Brooklyn wear the cast all the time or just when she is in therapy?
She wears it 24 hours a day for the next 20 days or 20 sessions. It does not come off. At home, she has stuff that she has to work on at home as far as picking things up and putting them in buckets, carrying things with that left hand, trying to extend her elbows and her arm to, you know, reach up to help her put her arm through her shirts and things like that. So, yes, this is it's an intensive therapy for her, but it's a wonderful therapy because it does wonders.
And what kind of changes have you seen?
Immediately after the stroke, she couldn't walk very well. It took her about 3 days before she could start to walk again. And then once she was in therapy, it took a good 6 months before she was back to crawling on all fours on a regular basis. Her walking was very unsteady initially, but now has gotten much better. She could not use her left hand at all, even to stabilize objects, where over the course of the last year and a half, she's been able to stabilize with that left hand or transfer something from the left hand to the right hand. So a lot of her bimanual use is coming back over the course of the last year and a half. You know, the therapies are hard for her. It's hard for her to work that side of her body. You can see her really focus, but she's not a kid that gives up so very easily at all. And that's probably a wonderful thing for her that she just doesn't. She has that willpower to push through. You can really watch her focus in on trying to make that part of her body work because she knows it's supposed to, but she can't quite figure out how. And that's what we're working on.
What gives you hope for Brooklyn? I mean, this is as intensive for you in some ways, but you seem very hopeful. Where does that come from?
It comes from her. I mean, in all honesty, I mean, she's the one that keeps this going every day and is working every day. And yeah, you know, it's hard on everybody and it's hard on me to be here and do this every day with her, but I see her motivation and it motivates me and I know that she'll improve and I know she's going to get better. How long that's going to take? I don't know. I mean, we could be talking years this before she's back to what somebody would consider normal. She may never get back to a normal, but whatever she does, she's going to do it because she wants to do it. And she's just that type of spirit. She's just got a fire and you can't put that out. And she'll get to where she wants to be and where she needs to be because that's how she is. And that's what moves me to do this.
Were they good?
You're silly goose.
I got.
You ready to go home now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Bye, Ms. Brooklyn. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tell Ms. Nicole bye. Bye.
That was Nikki Walcott and her daughter Brooklyn at a therapy session at Kennedy Krieger Institute. Brooklyn is undergoing constraint-induced movement therapy after having had a stroke when she was just a year and a half. We have a link to information about identifying stroke symptoms in children and information about constraint therapy at the On the Record page at wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. It's great you're listening to On the Record. Please come back tomorrow.